Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing over 1 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition and stewardship of Florida public conservation lands, including programs like Florida Forever, Everglades Restoration, and more. The Florida Wildlife Federation. More information online at fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
More health care costs put a strain on Florida's budget. Haven't we heard this refrain somewhere before?
You know, here's an opportunity, maybe to add $4.7 million, maybe to reconsider where some of those corporate breaks are going to go.
Also tonight, a mental health advocate says the governor's promise for more funding this year doesn't go far enough to move Florida up from among the states spending the least on mental health care.
That's $1 more. We're at $37 a person, and now we're going to $38 a person. That still keeps us at number 50.
We'll also have the latest on several gun-related bills up for legislative action today, as well as a new effort to protect Florida's river of grass. I'm Tom Flanagan. As the 2016 Florida lawmaking session rolls on, this is Capitol Report. The Florida legislature is working on answering a big question: how to balance a $400 million hit to its health care budget. Lynn Hatter reports lawmakers rolled out a plan to account for a shrinking pool of federal health care dollars today.
This year, the Florida Senate is planning to spend $34 billion on health care services for special needs adults and kids and low-income Floridians. The House wants to spend $33.7 billion. Both chambers are factoring in the loss of $400 million in federal dollars that reimburse hospitals for treating low-income patients. Senate Health Care Budget Chairman Rene Garcia has rolled out a plan for divvying up the remaining funding based on the volume of charity care hospitals provide.
Category 1, we'll get 100% reimbursement. Category 2, we'll get 67% reimbursement. And then Category 3 and 4 would be 7.5 and 1 point, was it 1 point? Will be 1%, 7.5 and 1%. And that's the best that we can do.
The House is following a similar plan with three categories. The budget also contains some nuggets. The Senate wants to spend $1 million to fight an increase in HIV. For the past 3 years, Florida has led the nation in the number of new cases, and the climb has come as the state has cut personnel and budgets in the Florida Department of Health. Those health care job cuts are slated to continue. Representative Matt Hudson oversees his chamber's health care budget. FTEs equal jobs.
And this will include a 2.63% reduction in state FTE, or a reduction of 847 FTE.
The Senate has also put funding in the budget for charter schools to open health clinics in their facilities. Some traditional public schools already have such programs. And both chambers will fund an increase in enrollment for kid care as they eliminate a 5-year waiting period for legal immigrant children to enroll in the health insurance program for low-income kids. The move got the backing of House Speaker Steve Crisafulli earlier in the session.
In addition, I believe the time has come for us to remove the 5-year waiting period for kid care for lawfully residing immigrant children.
But House Democrats are already expressing concerns over parts of the budget proposals for mental health. House Minority Leader Mark Pafford says the legislature is not putting enough into related programs. The Senate proposes $5 million for additional beds in mental hospitals. And Garcia says there's funding to add about 40 more positions in the mental health hospitals as well. Pafford says now is the time to fix it before the budget gets to the chamber floors, where options for switching money from other parts of the budget begin to shrink.
You know, here's an opportunity before anything is unveiled, maybe to add $4.7 million, maybe to reconsider where some of those corporate breaks are going to go, that corporate welfare, and perhaps reallocate some of those dollars to places that involve mental health funding. I mean,
the two proposals rolled out Thursday are still early drafts of the overall health care portion of the budget. The document will undergo more changes as the House and Senate work to craft a single proposal. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
With the House expected to unveil its budget tomorrow, Regan McCarthy reports the chamber's Democrats are working to make their voices heard before the funds are divvied up.
Florida ranks among the bottom states when it comes to spending on mental health care. And while Florida Governor Rick Scott has included $19 million in health care spending in his proposed budget, Candy Crawford, CEO of the Mental Health Association of Central Florida, says that's not enough.
The $19 million that the governor has, the peanuts that he has thrown at us for mental health, doesn't even raise us past the 50th level in Florida. That's $1 more. We're at $37 a person, and now we're going to $38 a person. That still keeps us at number 50.
Crawford says if Florida wants to see real change, it needs to make a real commitment. And she says there are clear examples to follow.
36 of the states in the U.S. decided to make mental health a priority in the 2013 legislative session. The state of Texas appropriated out of general revenue an additional $256 million just that year to address the needs in Texas. I don't often think that Texas does anything better than Florida, but they did address it, they did make a difference, and they did appropriate real dollars.
Lantana Democratic Representative Lori Berman says Florida's lower mental health spending levels are leading to new problems arising in other areas of the state.
We have problems with gun violence. We have problems with domestic violence. They're not being addressed. And unfortunately, our jails are our number one mental health provider in the state, and that's not the way it should be in the state.
Berman says the Democratic caucus and other members of the legislature are working towards solutions.
Representative McBurney has a bill to talk about mental health courts, and that's really important that we can have some diversion programs and try and get people treatment and keep them out of the jail system. And that bill is moving forward. Representative Peters has a bill about workforce because she's very concerned that we don't have the doctors and nurses and physicians to adequately address the problem.
Berman says just talking about the bills is making positive change because it's helping to remove some of the stigma associated with mental illness. But she says for real change, those measures must not only get passed, but also get funded. And while House Minority Leader Mark Pafford says that's something he'd like to see happen, he says getting the money needed for mental health projects is difficult and becomes even harder once the general framework for the budget has been cemented in place. To give an example, Pafford uses two pieces of paper placed on the table in front of him.
This little piece of paper represents mental health and healthcare funding. This is environment, and let's say this is DOT. On the floor, we'll only be able to reach into this pot of money to deal with mental health. So if we did that, we'd probably be taking Enfamil or something away from babies or perhaps lengthening frail elders on wait lists. There's already tens of thousands. We won't be able to look into DOT's budget and say, gosh, maybe they don't need 10,000 palm trees against a brand new highway this year. Maybe we can allocate that towards a healthcare subject.
And since once the budget framework is made, money can't be moved from one pot like transportation or economic development to another like healthcare, Pafford says he's hoping to make his concerns heard now.
Having this press conference right now, talking about this really, really important subject, knowing full and well that this will be seen throughout the Capitol and in the Speaker's office and the Senator's the Senate's office and the Governor's office. You know, here's an opportunity before anything is unveiled, maybe to add $4.7 million, maybe to reconsider where some of those corporate breaks are going to go.
And Pafford says he and other Democrats could use options like amendments and debate later when the items come up on the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Still to come on Capitol Report, in the wake of a critical U.S. Supreme Court ruling, lawmakers look at sweeping changes to Florida's death penalty laws.
This is an opportunity now for the legislature to respond. And you can respond narrowly just to the words in Hearst, or you can respond more broadly to preempt future constitutional problems.
At its final House committee stop, a new open carry provision saw its fiercest opposition and support today.
It's like a glass of sweet tea that you've left sitting too long before dinner. It's still a glass of sweet tea, but it's all watered down and don't taste real good.
And the Florida legislature moves to enact more protections for the Everglades.
It is the largest ecosystem restoration project in the world, and all eyes are upon us. And I know the will is there. The people want this done. You guys want it done, and this bill will give us the means to get it done.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org.
Earlier this month, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Florida's death sentencing process. Kate Payne reports it's now up to the legislature to fix the broken system.
At the heart of the issue is who decides whether a defendant gets life or death. Under the Sixth Amendment, we have a right to trial by a jury of our peers. In Florida, a jury can recommend a death sentence, but ultimately the decision is up to the judge. That is what the Supreme Court found unconstitutional. In its Hearst versus Florida ruling, the court says the current system takes power away from the jury. Bill Eaton is a retired judge, and he wrote the book on capital litigation.
What this does is it takes the decision to make to impose the death penalty off of the bench and puts it in the jury box. And that's the way every state but three has.
Now that the debate is on the table, some experts say it's time to rewrite the state's entire death penalty system. The Senate Criminal Justice Committee heard recommendations Wednesday from a panel of death penalty experts. Robert Dunham represents the Death Penalty Information Center.
This is an opportunity now for the legislature to respond. And you can respond narrowly just to the words in Hearst, or you can respond more broadly to preempt future constitutional problems that could continue to place Florida's death penalty in jeopardy.
Florida is only one of three states that does not require a unanimous jury for a death sentence. And even a unanimous jury only serves an advisory role in Florida. Here's Bill Eaton again.
Florida requires unanimous verdicts in every situation except the recommendation of death.
The experts recommend that the legislature revamp the system. Judge Eaton says there's a lot at stake.
The legislature has a chance to really look at this thing and make it as good as it can. Because if you don't, it may be 10 years later, we come back and the same problem, or a different problem, but the same song comes up again. And we end up clearing out a whole bunch of people on death row simply because it didn't do the job right.
The experts note that Florida's system isn't keeping up with the rest of the country. Dunham says if the state doesn't fix the system, the Supreme Court will.
When you hear people talking about Florida's statute as being what they say, quote, an outlier, what they're essentially saying is that the state has placed itself in the spotlight for review by the United States Supreme Court.
It's still unclear how the Supreme Court ruling will affect the 389 people already on death row. One of those inmates, Michael Ray Lambrix, is scheduled to die February 11th. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
A controversial gun provision passed its final committee stop today. Nick Evans reports the measure allowing concealed weapons license holders to carry openly is headed for the House floor.
Thursday, the House Judiciary Committee opened with a simple bill that could excuse some disabled Floridians from jury duty. But the remainder of the slate was a bit more volatile.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This strike all amendment is the consequence of negotiations I have had with the Florida Police Chiefs Association regarding the open carry legislation that I've brought forward.
Representative Matt Gaetz, a Republican from Shalimar, says Floridians with concealed weapons permits should be allowed to carry their weapons openly.
This allows for the open carry of handguns only. It protects private property rights and makes very clear that nothing in the bill or in the laws of our state impair the rights of a private property owner to be able to dictate the conduct that they would have on their own property.
After he offered his bill, lawmakers from both sides of the aisle brought up competing last-minute amendments. Aides passed out freshly printed copies on yellow paper. Lawmakers shot up from their seats like popcorn, holding whispered conversations with fellow committee members, lobbyists in the audience, and the bill's sponsor. They got tripped up trying to keep track of amendments.
Representative Harrell, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask the sponsor of the original strike all amendment if this is a friendly amendment to the amendment.
The first alteration came from Republican Representative John Wood of Winter Haven. His changes would remove civil penalties against law enforcement officers. Coral Springs Democrat Jared Moskowitz proposed clarifying language that would presume probable cause if a person openly carrying doesn't show their license. Neither moved forward, but Gates agreed to address Moskowitz's proposal on the House floor. Lastly, Lake Worth Democrat Dave Kerner proposed an amendment that, well, here's how Gates describes it.
Representative Kerner is right. This amendment removes the open carry portion of the open carry bill, so I would ask you to oppose it.
And although the Florida Sheriff's Association supports Kerner's amendment, a number of individual sheriffs like Gordon Smith from Bradford County came to speak out against it.
The reason for that is you can't stand up here and say, I support the Second Amendment, but. Because I challenge you to go home and tell your spouse, I love you, but. That's not going to work. I assure you of that. And this amendment is like a glass of sweet tea that you've left sitting too long before dinner. It's still a glass of sweet tea, but it's all watered down and don't taste real good.
Kerner did something similar, amending central provisions out of an unattractive bill on a measure strengthening stand your ground provisions, and he was successful. His move against open carry wasn't, but he says the fight in committee shows Florida just isn't ready.
If anything is clear today, it is that Florida is not ready for open carry. I have seen things today that have blown my mind. I've seen elected sheriffs stand up and vote against or wave in opposition against an amendment to protect their deputies.
Gates' bill passed the committee easily, but not without a warning from Buddy Jacobs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm 2 days away from the 40th anniversary of my 33rd birthday, and I would assure you that I'm here to give you a little history and a little fact.
Jacobs is a lobbyist, representing the state's prosecutors.
In 1987, inadvertently, the legislature passed open carry. And guess what happened? Just a few months later, because of the outcry of the people of Florida, they came back up here in one day and did pass it to close it again, because the governor called us, the legislature, into session because it was a disaster.
Florida may be in for a repeat. The companion measure has two stops remaining in the Senate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
The bill Nick Evans just talked about wasn't the only firearm-related discussion at the Florida Capitol today. The Florida Senate passed a series of gun bills, as we hear from Sasha Cordner.
The first measure senators unanimously passed is by Naples Republican Senator Garrett Richter. It has the backing of the National Rifle Association and the Florida Police Chiefs Association.
Senate Bill 130 affirmatively declares that discharging a firearm in a residential area with a density of one resident to the acre or greater is a misdemeanor. It provides for two exceptions. One, if the firearm is discharged by a person lawfully defending life or property. And second, if the discharge does not pose a reasonable foreseeable risk to life, safety, or property.
That second exception, for example, would apply in cases where someone shoots a poisonous snake in their yard. Accidental discharges are also included. The bill's overall aim is to crack down on makeshift backyard gun ranges and to allow law enforcement to enforce criminal penalties. Violators could face up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. Another bill that received a unanimous vote aims to make changes to Florida's 1020 life law. It's by Jacksonville Republican Senator Aaron Bean.
We've put a lot of people away for using guns in the commissions of crimes, but that bill was never intended to criminalize defending yourself. So what this bill does, it's a repealer bill. Senate Bill 228 repeals aggravated assault. So aggravated assault, if you're convicted of aggravated assault, will be removed from the 1020 life provision.
In other words, the measure eliminates the possibility of someone getting a minimum mandatory sentence as a penalty for aggravated assault cases. For example, there are some cases where a person making a self-defense claim is serving 20 years in prison for threatening to use force. But Bean says his measure looks forward and does not apply retroactively. Another bill by Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley was more controversial, dividing Republicans and Democrats, a measure making changes to Florida's danger ground laws immunity hearing process.
This bill shifts the burden of proof from the defendant to the prosecution in justifiable use of force pretrial immunity hearings.
Currently, a person making a self-defense claim must prove their claim is justified to a judge to avoid a trial, but under Bradley's bill, it shifts that burden to prosecutors. The measure is in response from a decision by a majority of the Florida Supreme Court justices months ago that states that burden should stay with the defendant, but Bradley's measure stems from the dissenting opinion. And Fort Lauderdale Democrat Chris Smith says that makes no sense.
Immunity is such... You were stopping a trial. So if you're going to stop a trial, we want you to have the burden. And that's what the Supreme Court said. Now, it was alluded to that, you know, two people on the Supreme Court disagreed and they wrote the dissent. But when I was in law school, what we call the dissent is what the law is not.
Senate Democratic leader Athenia Joyner is also against the bill.
This bill further enhances the risk that a killer will be able to evade justice and never properly face the full investigation on trial because it potentially stops an investigation cold after the last man standing tells his side of the story. The dead do not have the opportunity to rebut the tale told by the survivor.
But Bradley says lawmakers have a duty to pass the bill to strengthen the intent behind Stand Your Ground.
One thing that I thought the left and right on the political spectrum always agreed upon is the concept that you're innocent until proven guilty. And it is a fundamental tenet of our criminal justice system that the state has the burden of proof in a criminal prosecution from beginning to end. So I simply suggest that we're getting it right today, that the dissent was correct, and we are going to bring full meaning and effect to the 2005 law that was passed dealing with justifiable use of force.
And the bill passed the Senate 24-12 with Democrats opposed. Meanwhile, its House companion failed on a 6-6 vote during its first committee hearing. It's uncertain what will happen with the bills moving forward. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Ronald J. Eben gives us a preview of tomorrow's Capitol action.
At 8 a.m. Friday, criminal justice numbers will be discussed at the Criminal Justice Estimating Conference. The conference at the Knott Building will hold what is known as an impact conference on criminal justice issues. The Enterprise Florida Board of Directors meets at 8:15 at the Turnbull Center. Governor Scott, who is asking for $250 million for Enterprise Florida, is expected to be among the speakers, along with Sissy Proctor, Executive Director of the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity. Housing issues will be on the table at the Florida Housing Finance Corporation Board meeting, that at City Hall at 8:30. The Drug Policy Advisory Council, which works on substance abuse issues, convenes at 9. The council reviews, then analyzes the impact on substance abuse of the state and will make recommendations for the implementation of a state drug control strategy. The meeting to be held at the Betty Easley Conference Center. Those are some of the goings-on in the legislature. Friday, January 29th, I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally tonight, we started this evening's Capitol Report with a few stories about the state budget. Of course, when it comes to spending money on many kinds of activities, the old saying, you can pay me now or you can pay me later, comes into play. Florida lawmakers were dealing with one example of that old truism today. When conservative Republicans rule the legislature, environmentalists don't get to celebrate many victories usually. But it was a different story today when a House committee voted unanimously to approve Legacy Florida. As we hear from Jim Ash.
Not only is it not nice to mess with Mother Nature, it's expensive. The Army Corps of Engineers didn't consider that in 1928 when it surrounded Lake Okeechobee with a massive earthen dike. But it's a lesson lawmakers can't ignore today as they face a withering Everglades south of the dike and a torrent of polluted runoff in the St. Lucie and Caloosahatchee rivers to the east and west. Their response is Legacy Florida. The $200 million spending plan is sponsored by Republican Representative Gail Harrell of Stewart.
This bill is really a major step forward, not only in restoring the Everglades, but securing an adequate and secure water system for all of South Florida.
It cleared the House Agriculture and Environmental Preservation Appropriations Subcommittee on its first stop today. The money will pay for a massive plumbing project designed to mimic a natural sheet flow of fresh water from Lake Okeechobee South to the fabled River of Grass. Anna Upton, an attorney for the Everglades Foundation, says Legacy Florida will also let Washington know that Florida is committed to paying its share of a $14 billion state-federal restoration plan that began in 2000.
It is the largest ecosystem restoration project in the world, and all eyes are upon us. And I know the will is there. The people want this done. You guys want it done, and this bill will give us the means to get it done.
The bill sets aside a quarter of the funds generated by Amendment 1, an environmental mandate voters approved in 2014. Some environmental groups are in court challenging the way the legislature doled out Amendment 1 dollars last year. Some of the spending went for salaries and other agency expenses. But Legacy Florida is a different story, says Eric Draper. Draper is executive director of Audubon of Florida and a principal author of the amendment.
This is right in alignment with what we were thinking about when we put the Everglades into the Amendment 1 language.
Deborah Keller, a lobbyist for the Nature Conservancy, says any investment in the Everglades pays for itself many times over. The Everglades keep South Florida's environment healthy, and that keeps tourists coming, Keller says.
It is something that the world cares about. Look at the visitation that comes into that area. Look at the species that are there. Look at the people that enjoy the fishing and the recreational areas, even as far down into the Florida Bay and the Florida Keys.
The bill is a priority for House Speaker Steve Crisafulli. Its chances are just as good in the Senate, where it's sponsored by Republican Joe Negron, the next Senate president. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Kordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, committed to protecting, educating, and promoting Florida's hospitality industry. Over 10,000 members providing over 1 million jobs. The Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. More at frla.org. And from the Florida Wildlife Federation, supporting acquisition and stewardship of Florida public conservation lands, including watershed and springs protection, gulf restoration, wildlife and fisheries conservation, and more. The Florida Wildlife Federation, fwfonline.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.